This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. We're going to get John Scott joining me here in just a moment here. We are at Wayland Brewing, located at 3740 North Buffalo Road in Orchard Park. I think we got John right here. So, hi, buddy. How are you? Can you hear? Can everybody hear you okay?
Nobody move.
We got a little short in the wire here. We had a little static. I think we're doing a little bit better here. So, I think we're okay. But, hey. Good to see you. I know you brought Heather with you, your lovely wife here from Buffalo Media. Heather Prusak, Channel 2, Channel 4. People know her from being in Buffalo Sports and Buffalo Media. And you have a newborn, Logan. How's everything going as a first-time parent?
It's great. It's actually funny. Heather, we were in Jamaica this time a year ago. And exactly today, we were sitting on the beach and she dropped two positive pregnancy tests on my lap.
Oh, wow.
Now, a year later... Logan will be 4 months tomorrow. Next week. So
I remember he was born, I believe, on my mom's birthday, mate, November 26th.
Correct.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah,
I got you. I'll always remember that.
Coming out of the Bills bye week.
Yes.
So things are great. Fatherhood rules.
Yeah, and, no doubt.
He's a great baby.
How many Ohio State onesies have you bought him so far?
Two. He wore one less than a week old for the Ohio State-Michigan game, which was a horrible introduction to the rivalry for him. And then I got him something that matched a shirt that I have from Homage.
Okay.
Shout out to them.
Yep.
And he rocked that start to finish of the college football playoff that ultimately led to a national championship.
Yeah, they did. What was that like for you watching Ohio State and go on their run once they got to the playoff?
I got to admit, it does not feel like other ones, and it is because of the Michigan game, and it is such a strange feeling. I mean, a national championship is a national championship. It's also, I think, part of my concern of the expansion of the playoff in general is it minimizes the regular season and things like that. I mean, they didn't make the Big Ten championship game. They lost a couple times, and they still got in, and, yeah, they had to fight a challenging road to win the national championship, but it doesn't feel the same because a lot of the season was underwhelming, and then it kind of crescendoed, obviously, towards a championship at the end.
John Scott here, WGRZ TV2, Channel 2 Sports Director. All right, so speaking of Ohio State, Jeremy White made me promise I had to ask you.
Okay.
Was the 2012 Elite Game between Ohio State and Syracuse the worst officiated college basketball game in the history of college basketball?
No. And clearly, on the one side of things, we don't remember it exactly as vividly as those of you who went to Syracuse. I will also say...
Like your wife, by the way.
Yeah. 11 years ago today, I think, is also when my Dayton Flyers
Syracuse
here in Buffalo.
Oh, yes, they did.
To advance to the Sweet 16.
That was Tyler Ennis' Syracuse team, right?
He was awful in that game.
Yeah.
C.J. Fair was the best player for Syracuse in that game. Mm-hmm. They tried rallying, but Ennis was horrible. Mm-hmm. And Dayton made the Elite Eight that year, best run they've had in over 30 years.
That the tournament's coming back to Buffalo next year, by the way.
It is.
Coming back to Buffalo. That game was in Buffalo. I remember that game. And, yes, it was terrible losing to Dayton here at home. And that Dayton team, they went on. What did you say? They went. Where did they go?
The Elite Eight.
Wow, that's right.
And they lost to four.
Who was on that team? Do you remember?
Oh,
any of the players?
I remember all of them now of note that anyone would know.
Really?
Probably There really isn't anyone. Jordan Seibert is a transfer from Ohio State that came. V. Sanford is a guy who hit the game winner against Ohio State in the opening round. Kendall Pollard was a big man. I mean, they were just a collection, and certainly not the most talented Dayton team predating it, and even since, certainly not the 2020 team that I heard Pat mention, the COVID tournament knocked out. But it was super exciting. They were just a collective. And that's what – and Pat was mentioning this. In this new era of the transfer portal and guys going to the draft, it's those mid-majors that can somehow retain guys and have the experience of 3-4 years playing together that are the most dangerous to these teams, that even if they're more talented man-to-man and – are at a higher level of conference or whatever it may be, those are the teams you look for when you're trying to pick your upsets, because the continuity and just being in battles for so long with one another, that is invaluable this time of year.
It's hard to get now, though, with obviously the way college sports is. You know what I remember about that game as well is post-game, I was on a media credential, and I went into the Syracuse post-game press room. And the way they do it in college, as you know, after the game, is they bring the coach and a couple of players out, and they say basically ask the student athletes a question. I, dumb, stupidly, I just jumped the gun, asked Jim Boeheim a question first.
Oh, I'm sure.
And of course, it was, you can't poke the bear. I'm not supposed to ask Jim Boeheim any questions until the, but he didn't like my question, so he fired off whatever it was at me, because something about the timeout or whatever happened out of a break. Anyway, that was Jim Boeheim in a nutshell. And then obviously we know that a few years later now, several years later, he's moved on. And obviously you know how big Syracuse brand is here in Western New York. Your wife went to Syracuse. And, you know, just from the outside looking in, seeing the ACC, seeing Syracuse down, is it just tough as a college basketball fan and surprising maybe to you?
It's not surprising, I think, to the people that I know that are affiliated and root for Syracuse because they didn't particularly think the hire to replace Jim Boeheim was the proper way to go.
I agree.
The easy choice to go, and it seemed maybe by many the natural way to go. But I think when you succeed a legendary head coach, you're in a really tough spot. It's the same thing of whoever the quarterback after Jim Kelly is in a really tough spot, and whoever the quarterback after Josh Allen, you're probably in a tough spot, because the odds of ever living up to that are about as slim as you possibly can. And it's not happening at Syracuse, and now we will truly see how they view themselves as a true national basketball power and how much influence Jim Boeheim still has on the decision-making on campus, to see if I think it's right to give one more season. But if you're Syracuse and the results are what they are, three seasons after Jim Boeheim, you have to believe and view yourself as an upper echelon college basketball program to say this is unacceptable and we need to move on and find someone else.
I am over your shoulder right now watching Seth Greenberg, and on the bottom of the screen it says, should the Big East and ACC merge? This is actually a topic being discussed in college hoops right now. What would you think about that?
I hate the realignment and all of the moving and shaking. And I'm watching conference tournaments, and you look up at the screen at random games, and you're like, oh, SMU is playing UConn or Oregon is playing Penn State, and it's I hate it. Mm-hmm. I hate all.
How about
of it.
The ACC tournament had Cal and Stanford playing each other?
It's just I am a traditionalist in many ways, especially when it comes to sports. So it's no surprise that I am not in favor of all of this. I just think it's ridiculous, and I think that taking out the regionalization of conferences is really hurtful to the overall rivalries and just connection that you can have with different teams and different schools.
You have anybody you particularly like in this tournament? What do you think is going to happen here?
Heather and I were talking as we're driving. She's like, I'm not very good at picking brackets. I'm like, who is good at picking brackets?
No, nobody is.
And like, my enjoyment and viewing of college basketball as a whole is down. So, no, I just it's a crapshoot to me. I do love that we can bet on the games now. And I was on my app all day yesterday doing things and the live betting and first half overs and all of that. And that kind of takes it out of the hands of I want this team to win. I have probably more so teams I don't want to win rather
yes,
than those
that I like that.
I do. Speaking of our guy.
Oh, my gosh, I know. Look at Ryan Stang with his Duke hoodie on comes in. Of course, I knew you'd be here because it's Duke Day. My gosh. Yeah, speaking of that. 694 entries in my pool. And as you say, I'm in 309th, Max in 238th. So he's beating me by like 70 spots right now for day one.
I'll say this, though, and I want to bracket this way. The first weekend, honestly, the first week doesn't matter.
No.
What matters is getting teams to the Sweet 16 and beyond. And so, sure, I picked UC San Diego to beat Michigan, but I had them losing in the second round. I mean, it was a great game at the end, and should they maybe have? Sure, but it's not going to kill your bracket. And then if you hit on Drake or McNeese or some of these and you don't have them going too far or they don't go beyond this, it doesn't really do you any good. What matters is what largely ends up being more chalk than not, Sweet 16,
yes.
Elite 8, and beyond. And if you land those, and obviously the Final Four and the championship game are what matters most. So if you're looking like you and even myself and you're like, my goodness, I'm far down in the standings. I got to scroll for 5 minutes. You're still alive as long as your teams are still late in the tournament.
That's why I reward upsets. I like to pick the upsets. You can get a few extra points here and there by doing that. All right, let's talk Bills. Anything the Bills have or haven't done, John Scott, that surprised you so far here during the free agency period? Have or haven't done so far?
Well, obviously, not to be redundant, cornerback two is the most obvious choice.
I would think they would have attacked that a little bit more.
I do, but I think maybe you said it yesterday. I think there's some ongoing dialogue and understanding of where things maybe are or could be with Rasul Douglas.
Sure.
That just seems like he's so prudent, Brandon Bean, at plugging holes to make sure he's not pinned in a corner come draft time, that I find it hard to believe he wouldn't have made it more of a priority since that was a starting position. Yeah, Joey Bosa was a necessity in terms of what he potentially can bring to the defensive line, but you had bodies there that at least you could fill that if things did not shake out how you wanted to. Same thing with the interior of the defensive front. You have guys there. Do you need upgrades? Sure. Wide receiver, same thing. Okay, you lose Mac Hollins. You swap him out with Joshua Palmer. Fine. Cornerback two is the one thing where if you rolled out the ball tomorrow, it's what? Jamarcus Ingram or
Dane Jackson? That's it.
And they're not going to do that. It's no slight to those guys, and it doesn't mean they couldn't win the job, but they're going to have a more solidified option there. That's where I tend to feel, and I don't have knowledge of this directly, I just have this feel that they've had ongoing conversations with Rasul Douglas. He's exploring what his market could be. And as Brandon said a week ago, we got a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a window here before the draft. There's a window from the draft to training camp and all of that. Mm-hmm. And Douglas is maybe looking at it the same way. He's going to say, all right, let me see what a team maybe does after the draft. And then maybe they can regroup. And if there's not a market for Douglas or the market doesn't satisfy him, why wouldn't you come back to this team? That's kind of what I feel based on his inactivity, Brandon Bean, at the position that maybe is almost a safety net below.
My biggest surprise is not attacking the interior defensive line as much as I thought they would based on things that they even said at the end of the season. That they did go out and get Larry Ogunjobi, then they find out he's got the PED suspension. And this goes to my point, which is the reason they still signed him, what did Brandon say? We kind of the
no
options were We're gone. Right. I was surprised they didn't attack that earlier.
That leads me to believe they're evaluating the draft and say, what are the deepest position groups with us having three picks in the top two rounds?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's the defensive front. That's edge rusher as well as the interior. And to me, I also believe they're not making 10 picks. Can you throw three fifth rounders and move up to the third? Probably not. But I think there are elevations to get third, fourth rounders more because you just do not need that amount of day three guys. They're not going to make the team. It just causes a little more chaos in terms of the how do we slide guys and maneuver things like that. So I think maybe that's why they didn't address the defensive line as a whole and particularly the interior because they view that as, hey, the best value if we stick at 30 or even move a little bit up or down from that slot is being able to get a really solid defensive tackle.
It's kind of a trade. Von Miller for Joey Bosa. Are they better?
Yes.
A lot?
Remains to be seen.
Because of the health?
Yes.
If he's healthy, they're certainly better, right? But that's what it comes down to?
100%. And Bosa wasn't healthy last year. He said he's played about 70%.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers were pretty identical to Von Miller, who mm-hmm. played 13 games. They were about the same type of player.
Right. Six years younger, too.
Right. I liked what Von did last year. I think when you stood here a year ago and said, what are we going to get from Von Miller? If I said second on the team in sacks, but he only had six, you'd say, well, that's a problem for the pass rush. But six sacks in 13 games, I know they were kind of clumpy beginning and end, but I think he had moments that if he – Brandon Bean leaving the door open. If he was your fourth or fifth pass rusher on a low deal with the value that Bean really heightened about just his character and his championship mindset, I'm okay with that. I don't think it gets to that point, but I think they are better with Bosa because the best type of player is a hungry player that has to prove themselves because if this goes – not maybe the Joey Bosa type way this year. Where does that land him at his career?
Yeah, he would love to have a great year. I love what he said, and of course you're familiar with him from Ohio State, but he said it's like going back to Ohio State where I'm going to a football town with a football culture. All there is football here. No disrespect, right? He's not trying to say it that way, but he's been out in LA and you know, his brother's out in San Francisco. He had a chance maybe to go to Miami, the word was. It's like I just want to concentrate on football. And I like that part of what I'm hearing about him.
I also think it's another example of the Bills culture and the Bills organization is something people want to come here. It's not just Josh Allen. Obviously, Josh Allen elevates them into a Super Bowl contender annually. But on the defensive side of things, Bobby Babich is really well-respected and really, really well-liked. Sean McDermott as a defensive mind is. And I think I brought this up on our show on Monday. Leonard Floyd, a similar type guy in terms of the – he had never before coming here – been a heavy rotation type guy. He was a 70, 80, 90% snap guy. And you saw, he tailed off at the end of that season, but you saw what he could do when, as the Bills say, the best version of themselves and in a rotation to save them from themselves, for lack of a better term. So I think that was also appealing to Bosa, who even said with a specific number, 35 to 40 snaps might be his sweet spot. And that's what I think is perfect for him in this rotation.
John Scott joining me here. We are live at Whalen Brewing. Come on by, 3740 North Buffalo Road in Orchard Park. And Logan has woken up, and John is saying hi, and he's bringing him right on the set. Is he going to talk to us? What does he think about the Bills' moves so far? Logan, what do you think about the Bills' moves so far? Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad. He doesn't really he doesn't want to tell us what the moves are.
He's soaking it all in.
There, I love it. I love it. Come on by, say hi if you want to talk to John. Say hi to him. Heather as well. And we're going to be watching some college basketball a little bit later here for a little while. All right. I have a debate on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo with Matt Bove, our buddy from Channel 7. He believes wide receivers is still more of a priority for them in the draft than I believe. Because I just don't see them taking one a little bit higher. And let's be honest, this isn't the greatest wide receiver class compared to the last several. I just think this team is going to roll with what they have. There's no room if you take somebody at 30 or in the second round to really insert them. Now, a lot of it depends on what they feel about Keon Coleman, but I don't think they're pulling any sort of shoot on him in any respect.
I think they should.
Okay.
I think they should.
Take one early.
Yes.
Okay.
Because my belief and it's I hate always doing like a Chiefs comparison. It's just kind of low-hanging fruit. But I don't think the Bills need an A-plus bona fide number one receiver. I think the everybody eats mentality is a great philosophy for the offense. But why can't they everybody eats as a BB-plus regular type receiver with A potential? And at this point in time, who could you say amongst this wide receiver group has a ceiling that could get you an A-plus type game? I don't think there is anybody on there. I like Khalil Shakir. He's a great complimentary piece.
Right.
But if he's the one that you're hanging your hat on is, hey, this is our best receiver, that's not what you should be surrounding Josh Allen with. Even if Keon Coleman elevates his game and plays maybe more in that Seattle Titans type range that we saw him pop a little bit before the injury, I don't think Keon Coleman is a guy that's going to be an A-plus type receiver maybe every now and again. But he's someone, if he's your number two, I'm cool with that. Or if he's like 2A and 2B, that's where like I see like a Matthew Golden. That's kind of my draft crush. Obviously, he has the speed that they're lacking as well. When you talk about, and I think you've said it, you comprise a wide receiver group almost like a starting five in basketball. Joshua Palmer is the man beater, and Keon's the size, and you have Shakir as the slot and things like that. You talk about space, and I was thinking this too. Why does Curtis Samuel have to be on this team? I know the money is a little bit tricky, but certainly from a production standpoint, they would be banking on him being better in year two and healthy. But if you drafted a receiver because it fell to you in the right capacity in rounds one or two, I'm cool with it. Also, look beyond this season. I mean, I know they signed Joshua Palmer to a longer deal, but and Coleman's here and Shakir, but Samuel's not. And to me,
it's got 2 years left, I think.
And I think if you could slot guys maybe in their proper roles if you drafted one day one or day two.
All right, and then safety, also an interesting spot, because right now I believe it's going to be Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop. You could do a lot worse than DeMar Hamlin as a veteran backup. That's what he is to me. He started 17 games, or he started for this team last year, and did a nice job. He's not a ball-hawking athletic freak. We know that. I think Cole Bishop's that guy. But the way that they've talked about Cole Bishop and, hey, he's still got to earn it and everything, do you think that there's still an opportunity to draft over him?
I mean, Bean goes best player.
Yeah.
And they definitely, beyond this season, need a running mate for Cole Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't hate it. And as we've seen, they make it clear safety is one of the positions you almost need a redshirt year as a young player. And so if they drafted one in the second round and they don't see the field, okay. I'm not going to hate it because they have done a pretty good job at seeing years down the road.
It's so funny you say that. When they drafted Cole Bishop last year, I tweeted out, hey, I don't think this guy's going to play all that much this year. He's going to be a reserve. He's going to play special teams. I got murdered on social media from people saying, oh, my God, that makes it a terrible second-round pick. No, it doesn't.
Well, that's because people – there is a shocking, polarizing conversation around DeMar Hamlin. People just don't like him.
That's right.
And they think he's a terrible player, which I push back on. I recognize and understand his limitations.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills do too.
Yep.
But similar to Levi Wallace and Dane Jackson and some of these other guys, he is a solid veteran player who's been in the system that you know what you're going to get out of when you throw him out there.
And they really care about guys at that position who've been in the system.
100%. So to your point with DeMar, I think he's actually going to be in his perfect role as a backup and a special teams guy who can slide in if injuries hit them, which Rapp certainly has a history of that, and you can – I will feel good about it. Maybe not the DeMar Hamlin people on the other side of things. But back to the drafting, sure. Like, I'm a huge Cam Lewis guy. And Derek Forrest, I think people liked what they saw in his 1 year he got the opportunity. Does that mean he has to be on the team? I think we get a lot of times lost in the sauce of free agency.
Yes.
And
where does he fit now?
Yeah.
Where does he fit in the 90s?
Oh, this guy's definitely going to make it. And this guy's definitely going to be impactful and all in this and that. And then it's funny, you revisit things in October, November, and you're like, why did I think that? Or boy, did I get that wrong. And so, yeah, you see a Derek Forrest, you see all of the guys they have at safety. There's no reason that necessarily they couldn't find one in the draft that could push one of them out and make them a better team and still not see the field.
All right, before you let you go, Heather's here. I'm going to ask you both a question because we've had a debate. Yana and I, my wife, we had a debate the other day, and I thought she was crazy, and then I brought it to the group, and apparently our buddy Andy Young sided with her. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard me. You saw the tweet I had on this the other day. Who is more world famous? More people in the world know who this person is. Josh Allen or Haley Steinfeld?
Heather and I have talked about this before. It's interesting.
Yana says Haley. I say Josh. Andy Young agreed with her, said Haley. I think Jeremy and Joe both said Josh. But we are in we would think Josh in a lot of ways. Maybe I'm being too blinded.
So I'm going to say world famous.
Matt Bove said Haley because of the Marvel. And I said, but do people really know she is? They might watch Marvel. But do they know who Haley Steinfeld is?
I mean, she had some popular songs. Mm-hmm. And the Pitch Perfect movies, yes. That's what I knew her from.
She was on the cover of Vogue, I believe, right?
Sure.
I think someone told me that.
I actually saw a trailer for a movie with Michael B. Jordan that she's the lead.
Okay.
The female lead in. Uh-huh. That's coming out, I think, in April. So I think it's funny. I think they each have elevated the other.
Yes, that's right.
To make them both bigger stars. Now, Josh is all over the place now on national marketing campaigns and obviously is the MVP. When they first started dating, I think it probably just depended upon the group of people you were talking to. When I talk to my friends from college, they're like, who in the heck is Haley Steinfeld? And I'm like, oh, she's the one that's from Pitch Perfect, and I guess she has a few hit songs.
Okay.
But I'm sure if you went to non-football people, they would be like, who's Josh Allen? They'd be like, I don't know. Like, I was on a plane to maybe it was the playoff game, and I was sitting next to these two women who were going to Florida. I think we were connecting somewhere south. They're like, who's Josh Allen? But I bet you if I would have asked him, do you know who Haley's? I think I actually said, oh, she's dating Haley Steinfeld.
And he is,
the light bulb went off.
Wow.
So it's a fun conversation.
It is.
But I think it's totally based upon your perspective and maybe your interests.
I love it. All right. I'll let you get back to your son and your wife here. Thanks a lot for coming by and sticking around. And I'll be off here in a little while. We're going to talk a little more hoops. We got some people filling up here to watch some college basketball. So hope everything's well with you. And obviously people can catch you on TV. And where else can they find you?
Yeah, Twitter at John Scott TV. Sports Talk Live is Monday nights,
yes,
at 7 o'clock on Channel 2. Vic Carucci joins me, Adam Benigni as well. Paul Hamilton.
Yes, our Paul is on there with you.
We're going to maybe try to get a little more guests on as we're turning the corner towards the draft, and it's a little more loose. But, yeah, Channel 2.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot. John Scott, come on in. Say hi to John. Say hi to Heather and beautiful Logan Scott. We'll be back after this timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.